basically harassed, hazed, and bullied to the point that I was having panic attacks while arming up at a clearing barrel. I was carrying loaded firearms for 12 hours a night and being forced into these panic attacks. It was basically said to me at one point I wouldn't be worth the cost of the bullet that it took to take myself out. This one particular person just made it their mission to make me miserable, to make me want to quit. And that was my first introduction into the real Navy. That was spring of 2014. I was 19 turning 20. And that was my introduction to what the military and what the Navy was really like.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. Hey everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Victoria, who is a Navy veteran. She spent 8 years as a Master of Arms focused on anti-terrorism, has 100% VA writing for mental health, plus some other things, and now works for a company that consults and helps veterans with their VA ratings. She's also married to a veteran, and they are navigating civilian life together with 4 fur babies. You did not mention to me that you have 4 fur babies, Victoria.
So many.
But thank you so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely. I'm glad to.
Well, I want to start this out by first of all, just asking you if there is one word or a few words that you could use to describe how you are feeling coming into this episode today. How would you do that?
Nervous energy. Yeah. Excited, but nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. So it's interesting hearing the different, I guess, energies or vibes or whatever word you want to use to describe it that everyone brings into the interview. So that nervous energy, I would say, is not an uncommon one for something like this. So
good to hear.
Yeah, you are not alone there. But again, thank you so much for being here today. There's so much that you have to share from what I heard on the last podcast you were on, which you can plug that if you want here in a little bit. For anyone that wants to go check that out. But I want to pass it off to you for you to share your story.
Okay. So yeah, I'm Victoria. I'm going to go back to the beginning of my Navy story and how it all started. So sophomore year of high school, I decided I wanted to go to the Naval Academy. That was it. That was it for me. I wasn't going to go to college. I was going to go to the Naval Academy and be a Naval officer. So I started putting in the work. I was building my resume, building up my physical strength, networking with politicians who could give me my sponsorship, really put a ton of work in. And then summer before my senior year, I started getting really sick. It was like the day after my birthday. I started getting really, really sick. And it was about 6 months of in and out of the ER, tests, you know, scans, all that kind of stuff. And I found out at the beginning of that November. So this was, gosh, November of 2011. I'm old. I found out that I had to have moderately major surgery. I had to have my gallbladder removed. Basically, it had stopped working. The problem with that, though, was applications were already due for the academy. And I was ineligible to apply because of that surgery. I had to have a whole year between the surgery and applying again. And if I wanted to apply again, I would actually be back 2 years because of when the cutoff was. So that was really rough. My senior year, my dreams were just kind of taken away from me. And I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do when I graduate. So fast forward, I kind of drifted for about a year after graduating in 2012, just working, thinking about schools, that kind of stuff. But I wasn't very good at school. I had undiagnosed ADHD. So school itself was, I love learning, but I was not good at school. And I was driving home from work one day and I was like, I'm going to the recruiting station. I'm done. I'm tired of waiting. I'm not doing this. I'm just going to go. And it took another like 6 months to get approved to join because of that surgery. But I did it. I pushed through it. My mom was an amazing rock through all of it. She advocated for me. She helped me out. And I shipped off in July of 2013. It was a big culture shock for me. I had grown up fairly, I don't want to say sheltered because I love my parents and I hate speaking. I don't want to speak poorly about them. But I grew up yeah, fairly sheltered. I was homeschooled. I was raised in a very, very Christian home, just walking the straight and narrow kind of deal. And so meeting people from every aspect of life, joining for every different type of reason, it was a lot for me to deal with. And I'm just high strung by nature. Like I was always just told, yeah, she's basically Hammy from Over the Hedge. If you remember that old movie, that's me. And so I made it through boot camp, kind of started having some anxiety problems, wasn't really dealing with how far people would take small problems. Like they would go from 0 to 100 so quick. And I was like, it doesn't need to. We're good. I got this. It's taken care of. But graduated, went through schooling. School was a lot of fun. I got to travel to a couple different states because of my specialty. So I got to do, I ended up doing 3 schools before I even hit the fleet. And then I got stationed in Bahrain, which was 9,700 miles away from where I grew up in a little town in northern Georgia. So that was a lot. I definitely bit off more than I could chew moving that far away in my first command. I had also navigated breaking up with my high school boyfriend at the time, all this kind of stuff kind of happening. Stepping out of home, I'm the oldest kid, so I was the first one to kind of break away, and it was difficult for my mom because that was her baby, you know, so a lot of stuff going on. But I was like, nope, I'm going to do it. I'm going to throw myself in. Enjoy being in the military, enjoy being in the Navy, do this job that I picked, because I picked Master at Arms. I knew I was going to do law enforcement or security of some variety like that. I wanted to do that. So I picked it, and I get on my first mission and it does not go well. To this day, I still don't know why these accusations came out, but I was accused of gun decking my maintenance. And if anybody listening doesn't know what gun decking is, that is basically a Navy term for forging your logs, saying that you did something when you actually didn't. I was accused of that. I was punished for it. And then I was accused of it again. I was basically harassed, hazed, and bullied to the point that I was having panic attacks while arming up at a clearing barrel. I was carrying loaded firearms for 12 hours a night and being forced into these panic attacks. It was basically said to me at one point, I wouldn't be worth the cost of the bullet that it took to take myself out. This one particular person just made it their mission to make me miserable, to make me want to quit. And that was my first introduction into the real Navy. That was spring of 2014. I was 19 turning 20. And that was my introduction to what the military and what the Navy was really like. It did not go well from there. I ended up working for that person again on another mission. Thankfully, some scenarios, situations happened, and I ended up being moved off that team and moved to another one. Didn't wish the scenarios happened, but glad that it ended up working out for me and I was able to go somewhere else. And about that time, I started dating my now ex-husband, who's also in the Navy. And that was messy. If anybody's done a military relationship before, they can be messy, for sure. And did not know this at the time, but he was emotionally and mentally abusive. I was just like, oh, somebody's paying attention to me. I want attention. You know, I'm lonely. I'm single. Make me feel good about myself. And between everything that had happened to me at the beginning, and there's some other stuff that happened towards the beginning of my career I won't talk about just because I don't really want that out there on public record. But between all that and between the abuse that I was dealing with from my ex in 2015, I had my first mental breakdown and I was put on light duty for a month and told I had 30 days to get my anxiety under control and be mission ready, or they were going to send me back to the States and potentially medsub me. I got incredibly lucky. The officer that was working in mental health at the time saw through everything and saw that it was deeper and that this was built up of, you know, experiences and traumas and stuff, and worked really hard with me and continued to stay in touch with me as long as he was assigned to Bahrain. He ended up rotating out before I did. Worked really hard with me to come up with at least some coping mechanisms. He's like, if you can just get through the next, I think it was 9 months or something like that, you're done. You can go back to the States to your next command. Just get through this and you can do it. So it wasn't great. I was still having, because when the breakdown started, I was having at least 2 panic attacks a day, at least. And I didn't know what they were because, you know, the age that I was raised in was very much mental health is only for war veterans and people who have been, you know, severely criminally traumatized. It wasn't just you can have anxiety, even if, you know, you haven't been held at gunpoint or, you know, whatever. So I was still trying to break that wall and accept that it's okay for me to feel this way, but I can also control it. So I finish out my time in Bahrain. I'm still going up and down with my now ex, just not a good person at all. And he knows it. And that's why he acts like I never existed. But we moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and get stationed at my command here. And I was like, cool, fresh start. Nobody knows me here. No, there are at least 2 people who were in Bahrain with me who knew me. And I was like, great, this is following me. This is what they warned me about. This is why they warned me to stay out of trouble and stay under the radar, because the rumors about me in Bahrain carried over to Charleston, even though I was like, well, I can prove that never happened, but no one's going to believe me. But regardless, I kept trying to work through the anxieties. Definitely was starting to ramp up more. But at the same time, I was around or interacting with my now ex all the time because we were on the same time zone again, instead of being in different countries. Got very lucky. I met my best friend in the whole wide world, besides my husband. Otherwise, you're going to see a hand come over and smack me on the head. Met my best friend, and she has been a godsend. She has helped me through so many rough patches and, you know, talked me through so many anxiety attacks, but she made it a lot easier to deal with things because I have this tendency to be a know-it-all. I love knowing things. I love just having information, knowing information. If I have a question about the world in some variety, in some way, or a question about a TV show or a movie, I will look it up just so that I can know what it is. And that branded me as a know-it-all because I would always answer the questions and I would always, you know, insert myself into the training conversations and everything. And with my background in martial arts from when I was growing up, I was also decently good at the physical aspect of our job with physical manipulations, holds, things like that. So I was not super popular, even though I wasn't trying to be, you know, that girl, the pick me girl. I wasn't trying to be that. I was like, I know these things. I want to share these things with you guys. And I got really good at one particular aspect of our job. And that kind of became my thing that I got known for. But then when I had to go to where I was downloaded, meaning I didn't arm up, I didn't gear up because of my back, the rumor started again that I was malingering, that I was lying. And we did have those girls that would do that. They would have some reason always to be downloaded or working in admin. And for me, I was like, no, I physically cannot carry 60 pounds of gear on my back. It looks like this. People can't see that. It looks like a C. I was like, I need to wait till my new vest comes in and I'll be good. I'll be back up on it. So it was just this constant like stream of you're not good enough or you're too much or whatever. And for somebody who has general anxiety disorder, everything causes anxiety. Every single thing in life causes anxiety. And I would just come home from work and cry because all I wanted to do was help people. All I wanted to do was do my job. And nobody believed me. They were like, there's no way that that's really what you want. Like, they just didn't believe that it was genuine. And about that summer of 2018, my marriage fell apart and it was messy. And I should have handled it way sooner than I did. I made some poor timing choices and got caught doing those poor timing choices, even though I was ready to exit the situation. And it blew up in my face. My ex tried to get me sent to Captain's Mass, which is NJP for anybody who is not in the Navy, because he didn't get his way. My punishment fit the misstep that I made. They took away something that actually mattered to me instead of, you know, sending me up for the sake of it, the principle of it. They took something away that I had worked for and I was almost guaranteed. And I was like, okay, yeah, that hurts. That shows me that I did something wrong. Cool. But I'm dealing with this man harassing me daily or harassing my command daily for 4 months. And I'm incredibly lucky that my now husband was by my side for that. He was my best friend as well at the time. And obviously we ended up together because I definitely don't know if I would have made it through that summer without him. I mean, I ended up in the hospital at one point, not for mental health, but because I got so stressed out that an infection just wiped out my whole body. And my ex was laughing at me when I told him I was in the ER or in the hospital, like actually admitted. And just because my ex was in the Navy as well, he was out at this point. He was weaponizing everything he knew about the Navy and how he could target me and take advantage of me and all this kind of stuff. So 2018 fucking sucked. Pardon my French. It sucked. It was awful. But good things came out of it. You know, I started my relationship with my now husband and, you know, we decided, okay, we're going to navigate this last little bit. I was getting out in March of the next year. I was like, cool. Just like Bahrain. I'm almost done. I can get through it. And it was just constant ups and downs. One week I'd be fine. The next week I'd be depressed. Then I'd be fine again. And the next week I'd be so anxious that I was, you know, shaking. Like, you know, I was, you know, those little buzzy toys that you can get for your dogs where they just like bounce around. Like that's what I felt like, you know, constant snarky comments, you know, whether or not it's true. And it's not, I can tell you that much for certain. But anytime a female is successful, she's immediately branded as having golden knee pads. I swear on everybody in my family that I love, I never did that, but they were convinced that I was doing something. And that really like affected me. It really messed me up because one of the things I pride myself on, even though I don't try to like broadcast it because it sounds fake, is I'm about the most genuine person you're going to ever meet. What you see, what you hear, what I tell you is exactly what the reality is. I don't have it in me to just lie for lying's sake or to embellish things. I'm just Victoria. I'm just here. But nobody wanted to believe that. They just wanted to believe their narrative that made them feel better about themselves, and my feelings be damned. And towards the end of my time in Charleston, I butted heads with somebody I worked under. They made a comment that was not okay for them to make, several comments actually. And I didn't feel comfortable standing up for myself because this person was bigger than me and would use that physical intimidation. So I went to my next chain of command. I said, hey, here's what's going on. I'm a month out from my checkout phase. Take me out of section. Take me out of section. Put me in admin for a month. I'm done. I don't want to deal with this. He goes, well, why? And I told him, I said, it's a hostile work environment. And you just see all the blood drain from his face. Cause that you don't say that in the Navy. As soon as you say that, or you say that you're going to make a complaint to equal opportunity or whoever, it's real deal. I said, I don't want to do that because I just want to move on with my life. I want to get out of the Navy and be fine. He's like, but this is the point where I'm feeling unsafe. And the next night, this person comes into my space. And at the time I was in a closet of a room where our dispatch was. It was maybe 10 to 15 feet long, very shallow, comes in and absolutely physically intimidates me, like comes up standing over me and goes, how dare you say that? How dare you try to ruin my career by telling me it's a fucking hostile work environment? I'll show you a hostile work environment. And I was like, I just kind of looked at him because I was going to start crying at the time because that's how I react when people get mad at me, as I cry. And I was just like, are you kidding me? This is not happening. Like, this cannot be happening. And I had to go report it. I was like, he came right back in. It's on video. You've got it on camera. Like, this is not okay. And of course they didn't do anything because this person was a golden child. And, you know, I got my way. I got taken out of section and put on admin duty or something to that effect. But I was like, that's my first interaction and my last interaction are both people in positions of power telling me exactly how much I don't matter. And all I've ever wanted to do, and I will tell everybody this, God, the universe, whoever you believe in, put me on this earth to help people, to support, to protect, to help. It's all I've ever wanted to do. And these people that end-capped my career were just like, no, you don't get to. You're worthless. So I was happy. When I left, I was dancing and smiling and ignoring that person when I wasn't, you know, giving him the bird behind his back. I was just like, nope, I'm done. I'm out of here. And the cherry on top is I was going to the reserves for 2 years just to finish out my contract, see if I liked it. They meritoriously promoted me to E5 the day I got out. And this person was pissed about it. It's a waste of rank, da da da. And I was like, not my problem, dude. I'm good. I got what I wanted out of this, and you have to sit there and know that I got what I wanted out of this. So that was the stuff that happened in my career that really caused some problems. I ended up making a claim. I got 30% for mental health the first time around. And I remember thinking like, oh, that seems a little low, but I didn't know much about the VA. I was, oh gosh, this is 2019. So I don't even know what age I was, like 25, 26 at the time. I was like, I don't care. Went off to the reserves. And again, this is 2019, so something is coming up very quickly at that time. So I start the reserves, and I also start my job working unarmed security for, I can't say who, but I worked at a data center of a variety. And I had some issues adjusting because I was very military mindset. This is how we do things. This is how you do asset protection. This is how you do force protection. Like, this is, you're not doing any of this right. Hindsight's 2020. I should have gone in a little bit more humble. Caused some tensions there that never really resolved themselves. So I'm juggling reserves and working full time at the with security. And that fall, my now husband gets orders to Bahrain and heads out to Bahrain. It was supposed to be for 12 months, a little bit less when it comes to, you know, taking leave, transfer leave, and everything. It was fall of 2019, and we all know what happened 6 months later. So. He's dealing with everything going on in the Middle East, and then COVID hits, and I was an essential worker and dealing with it with the reserves. Thank God I was not full-time or not full, but like not active duty. I don't know how people who were active duty during COVID dealt with it. I truly commend them because absolutely not, but it was really rough. It definitely contributed to some of the PTSD I had from my ex, heightened my anxiety, all that kind of stuff. Very, very blessed that I had the leadership that I had working with that security department. All my managers were former military of some variety. So as I'm trying to adapt to civilian life and being a supervisor and running this program that is globally known, and then going and having a meltdown because someone that worked for me said something mean and hurt my feelings while still having to brief whoever high up in the company what's going on with our COVID measures and stuff. Very, very lucky I had the people I worked for and who understood and who were willing to guide me through this transition, because I probably would have rage quit at least five times otherwise. But yeah, that was I worked there all the way through until 21. Hubby came home. We moved. His last 2 years were fairly low key. Had some family. The 8 years I was in the Navy, both active and reserve, I was very detached from what was going on at home. I knew what was going on, but it wasn't real to me because I wasn't there experiencing it. And so we found out that someone I love very, very much had breast cancer while we were in Oklahoma, right after our wedding, too. I mean, within months of our wedding. And I'm kind of glad I was detached from it because I did not handle it well when I was there with her. It was very difficult. But that just, I mean, I'd had friends who took their own lives or died in some fashion when I was active duty. But again, it was detached. It was real, but it wasn't real. Like, it hurt, but I hadn't seen them in years. So, move on. That really messed with my head. It really made me think about mortality a lot more, watching them bring her ashes up during the funeral and stuff. So last year was really rough. And this is all post-Navy. I'm just kind of going through my story, kind of giving the full synopsis because I don't talk about myself too much. I got sick again last year, right around the same time as I got sick in 2011. Same symptoms, same issues. And I'm like, it can't be the gallbladder. It physically cannot be. Like, it doesn't exist. And I'm very thankful that I have an amazing VA system down here in South Carolina because they moved heaven and hell to get me taken care of, both mentally and physically. They streamlined me through the mental health wait list to get me seen by a psychiatrist so I could continue with my medications. They got me in with all the specialists I need, and I did end up getting diagnosed with a chronic condition that's not curable, but it is manageable. But that was my 2023. My other mama died. I had another family member pass. My high school dog died. I got sick. It felt like things had not stopped. It was supposed to get better after I got out, but it felt like things just did not stop. Because those 2 years in Oklahoma, I was playing housewife. I was taking care of the house so that he could go to work and not have to worry about things. So it's been a roller coaster. There's a lot that goes into, I mean, there's little stories everywhere in there of things that I went through and experienced. Like I said, there's some stuff that I won't talk about, but that a lot of female service members and veterans have experienced, male ones too, but easier for the females to relate to. And it felt like, as badly as I wanted to do good in the world and to serve my country, like my great grandfather did, every time I turned around, somebody was there to be, pop me in my forehead and say, sit back down. And in coming to this job that I work now, and I won't go into what I, the, like the whole spiel, but I don't get told to be small and be quiet and everything. My voice is what makes me successful. And sharing my stories, I talk about my stories all the time. I share what happened to me because it helps the people that I work with open up and feel comfortable and feel safe to talk about their stuff. But I've got a lot going on. I was diagnosed with general anxiety disorder at like the highest level possible. Diagnosed with PTSD by accident. I was doing an ADHD evaluation and she's like, you have PTSD too, right? And I was like, news to me. Sounds good. Just add it to the alphabet soup. I've also got a lot of physical stuff. Like I said, I had that chronic condition, got diagnosed, but I've got other physical stuff that really hampers my ability to be as active as I once was. But I'm really trying to make 2024 the year that I change my perspective. Go back to being the silver linings person that I've always been inside, and just enjoy life in the moment and try to overcome the, I call them the goblins that live in my brain. Like, I had to make it funny somehow. I had to like say something goofy because otherwise I would cry. But the little goblins in my brain that are just like, oh, no, be anxious or anything. Like, even right now, talking about it, like they're trying to make me anxious inside. I'm like, this is fine. You've talked about this all the time with people at work. So it's been rough. I still very much struggle, and that's why I ended up with 100% on my VA rating. I'm also classified as housebound. My anxiety is so bad that I very rarely leave my house unless it's to a trusted place or with my husband's with me, and even then it's get there, get back. We may go out once a month, usually once every other month, to sit down in a restaurant. Every other time is deliver the food or go get the food and come back. So it's frustrating, but I'm trying to use what I experience on a daily basis as a way to open other people's eyes and be like, this is not abnormal. if you experience this, you know, the fact that I experienced delusions because of my anxiety and PTSD is not, it's not a great thing, but, you know, if you're trying to hide that, you don't have to, you know, you can talk about it and not be looked at like you're crazy. Sometimes you're looked at like you're crazy, but, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, that's really rough. And I'm like, I know it's really rough. But yeah, that was really convoluted and long and all over the place, but that's kind of my story, where I started, where I am. And just trying to see what happens next.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you shared everything you shared for a few reasons. First of all, the part where you talked about after the military and it not being easy and like sunshine and rainbows, right? Because I think when we serve active duty, most people are looking at the other side, right? Like air quotations, right? The other side of like this golden rainbow, like, oh, life is going to be so much better. I'm going to have freedom. And like, yes, don't get me wrong. The freedom as a civilian compared to active duty, it's great.
Yeah.
It also comes with a lot of other extra bullshit that, you know,
yes,
active duty doesn't really know about because I haven't been there, because the civilian that you are when you leave the military is not the same civilian that you were when you entered the military.
No.
And so that's something that I know I was not prepared for, because I was kind of like, you know, in the same mentality of like, I didn't go to war. I wasn't like a combat
right.
veteran, like transition should be easy. I was also limb due when I got out. So I was like, oh, this should be cake. I had like time to decompress. Wrong. I think I'm still trying to figure things out. Even 2 years after I separated. Side note, your husband and I were in Bahrain at the same time during COVID. So I don't know if
I'll have to ask him about that later.
I don't know if he was in ISA or if he was up in like Manama area, but
he was at the main base, NSA.
Okay. Yeah. We were in Bahrain at the same time, but I was in ISA. I did venture up to Manama every once in a while, but COVID. So
yeah,
I kind of stayed put in my place. So we were both homeschooled. And I think it's interesting that you also experienced anxiety and experience it still, because anxiety was like the first thing that was a like a mental health like trigger for me, where I was like, something's wrong. I had really bad anxiety when I served, and so I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure the homeschool environment, I'm sure that had something to do with it, because I know I had anxiety when I was a kid too. But I thought that that was an interesting connection point there that really kind of like lit off a light bulb in my head. But I'd love for you to get more into the gun decking thing, because I'm really curious what the circumstances were surrounding that. Like, were you just working one day and then all of a sudden someone came up and said, hey, we're accusing you of this? Or was there like some scenario that led up to that?
I will try to remember as many of the details as I can. I have blocked a lot of it out just because I didn't want to give that person that power over me.
Fair enough.
So I was with Mobile Security out of Bahrain. So we did security on the supply ships in the Fifth Fleet area. So for anybody who doesn't know that, that is pretty much Africa over to the Arabian Gulf area. And so we had weapons, crew-served weapons, assigned to us. Mine was a 240, just a little bit smaller, easier for me to carry. That was my assigned weapon. I was responsible for cleaning it once a week. We were in off the Horn of Africa during storm season. Anybody who knows anything about that, the waves and the swells are crashing over everything all day long. It's inevitable. So inevitably, our weapons were a little more dirty than normal. Now me, when I have a task that I enjoy doing, which weirdly enough, cleaning guns, I enjoy doing. I don't mind doing it. I'll sit there and I'll work for a couple hours and just with my little toothbrushes, you know. And I believe that when this person had inspected the gun, the crew served guns that we had, he noticed that it wasn't fully clean or something to that effect, or that it was slightly off color in one area. So it was something very minor. I remember that much. And he, you know, they're like, oh, whose weapon is this? And I was like, oh, I think that's mine. You know, I'll take it out. I'll do it again, whatever. Not remembering that I'm sitting at the bow of the ship while cleaning this weapon, because I just took it up to post with me. And I'm like, I'll just clean it here. It's getting sprayed with water nonstop. So as I think I'm cleaning it, it's continually getting hit. And it was that and a couple other things. Again, it was just those, it was like any little thing that they could find I was lying about it and hadn't done my maintenance. There was even one day that I was told to go up to the bow and wipe down the 50 cal and get the cover over it. It's 40 knot winds. I was 110 pounds soaking wet. I got down the stairs and my chief was like, "Hey, don't go do that. We're going to send somebody else to." And somehow wires got crossed and he thought that I had skated out of it. So it was just stuff like that. It was honestly, at this point looking back, I might have missed a couple things. Again, I'm 6 months into the Navy. I am not going to be perfect.
Right.
Should I have been a little more diligent? Probably. Again, I'm 19. I'm figuring out life here.
Right.
But it was like two or three little things exploded into your gun decking. You're
Yeah.
lying. You're And so my EMI was to go around each post after my 12-hour shift at night and clean all the weapons. Mandatory 2 hours.
Extra military instruction for anyone who doesn't know what EMI is.
Honestly, I forgot what it actually
Yeah.
stood for. I just knew what it was.
I think that's what it stands for, at least.
It's
That
something
makes
like that.
sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I would have people helping me out with my mandatory maintenance because they wanted me to go to sleep. And I would get yelled at for that.
Wow.
So it was just like one or two things. Realistically, I think what the core of the issue was, is I joined and I got mastered arms right away. When this person joined, they weren't able to. They went undes seaman, which for anybody who doesn't know, that just means that you don't have a job, you go work the deck, and then when you get to a certain point, you're able to what's called strike for a rate
Yeah.
and ask for a job, and they'll give you one out of three of them or something like that. And they didn't get it. And so I realistically think that that's what it was. And because I was so chipper and bright and wanted to know things and wanted to share that I knew things, it was just a case of conflicting personalities with a severe power imbalance.
Yeah.
And once they found the weak spot in me,
Yeah.
they freaking went for it.
There is a really bad problem that exists in the military. I've been out for 2 years, but for years, 2 years, I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah, something like that. And I hope it doesn't exist, but I guarantee you it still does. And there's
Oh,
this
absolutely.
really bad complex that people have where they feel like I went through this, so
Yes.
you too need to go through this. And oh, if I think that it looks like it's easy for you and you're excelling, let me knock you down a few notches because I too need to make sure you deal with the pain that I went through. And it's even things as simple as like taking out the garbage. This was one thing that irked me when I was active duty, is that like, I get it. You want the E1s and the E2s and E3s to take out the trash, right? But the E1s, the E2s, and the E3s are also having to learn everything. Like, they're doing a lot. They're doing the grunt work, the maintenance. They're learning a new platform. They haven't been there long enough. Meanwhile, you got E5s and E6s that are just kind of sitting there chilling because they've already mastered their work to a point, and most E5s and E6s aren't pushing their brain to learn more. They're just like, I did my work. I'm going to sit here. And it's like, you could be a team player and help take out the trash, but they're like, no, it's the circle of life. The E1s and the E2s need to do it. But, people take it for things like that small, but then also take it to things as big as like, oh, someone just came here. They're really excited to learn something new and they're excelling. And instead of trying to foster that, let me knock them down a few notches because I had to work for what I got to.
And that's exactly what it was most times that I had run-ins, because I don't follow that philosophy.
Yeah.
If I know something and you need to know the thing I know, all right, cool. Let's go have a conversation. Let me teach you everything I know, because I have ADHD and I have hyperfixated on this for 6 months. And I'm going to teach you everything I know. I'm going to teach you how to use the cameras with both feet and both hands at the same time. I got you.
Someone said, I was having a conversation with someone the other day about something completely unrelated to military, but there's this person in this position, like a maintenance position that I communicate with regularly for one of the things I do in my world. And I was trying to figure out if there's anyone else that did that position because I was like, well, this person's sick. I don't want to bug this person while they're sick. Is there anyone else? And the response that I got was, well, no, because this person went through all this training. And if they train someone else to get to their point, then that person might take their job. And it borderline triggered me because I was like, why do we have this mentality anywhere in the world of competition over collaboration? Because if I'm training you to know what I know, the burden is taken off of me. Whereas dude is sick now and is going to get inundated with calls because, you know, we don't want to share the knowledge. And I just like, and I think it was triggering because of what we just talked about, right? Like that mentality of, I know all this and I had to work hard to get here and you must go through what I went through because I need to beat you down. And so it's kind of a common theme that I heard when you were talking was this idea of people trying to, you know, constantly beat you down and like, no, we don't want you to be great. And we want you to feel like you're worthless. And I just think of what that does to the human psyche. And it makes me reflect on my own approach towards things now. And sometimes thinking that I'm not good enough and kind of tracing that back to situations, whether in the military or before that or anywhere in my life where I'm like, man, you get beat down for 4, 6, 8 years, just constantly. Like, what does that do to the human psyche for the rest of our lives? You know,
it literally changes the way that your brain works. I had a conversation with my boss probably close to a year ago about the time I started training for my new position. And he had me recording these meetings I was doing so that he could, you know, give me feedback, be like, okay, this is what you did good. This is what you need to work on. And he sat me down. He goes, why are you so mean to yourself? And I was surprised. I mean, like, even just now, like, I'm starting to get the sting in my eyes. He goes, you're so mean to yourself. You're always saying things, you know, he goes, even if it's something as simple as we're not turning cameras on today because I look like, you know, the thing from the Black Swamp. He goes, you don't need to be mean to yourself. And he was like, why is that? And I was like, I don't know. And then I thought about it some more later on and I was like, this is why.
Yeah.
And my boss is a former Navy nuke.
Yeah.
So him saying, don't be mean to yourself, that shows you how bad it was. And I still struggle with that. I still have horrible imposter syndrome all the time. You know, I'm starting to be fairly successful in my field. And I still am like, I don't deserve these people. I don't deserve this success. I'm going to just keep my mouth shut. Even with the podcast I did previously and this one, I was like, I'm going to mess up. I'm going to do something wrong. I'm going to say something that's not compliant or, you know, does not follow what we're allowed to say legally and things like that.
Yeah.
And at the same time, again, my boss is like, you're a subject matter expert.
Yeah.
You know this stuff inside and out. Your brain picked this up. Own it, you know, show it. And it's a battle. It's a daily battle. My incredibly sweet husband, you know, still daily is like, you're the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. You're so smart. You're so intelligent. You're so good at your job. You care so much about people. And I'm like, you're lying. Like, say you're lying. Like, stop.
Yeah.
And it did. It really, I don't know what it is, but they just decided that I needed to be kept small. And I'm not a big person. I'm 5'3", 120 pounds. Yeah. I'm itty bitty. There ain't nothing to me. And they still, okay, she's small by stature. Let's make her small in her heart and her mind. And it's heartbreaking. It's absolutely heartbreaking. I feel so much sorrow for the people who live in that realm of, I need to do this to you to make myself feel better.
Yes.
It's not pity and it's not empathy. I feel sorrow for them because they are going to wake up 20 years from now and still be alone and still be miserable and still have nobody like them and not understand why.
Yeah.
And 20 years from now, I'm going to wake up with a family that I love around me, lifelong friends, a full heart, knowing that I have done everything in my power to show them how easy it is to be kind.
Yeah.
It's just that easy. Just be kind to people. And again, people don't believe me when I'm like, yeah, you want me to come over, you know, 3 hours before I'm normally awake and help you pick up your closet because you can't handle it? For sure. Got you. You need me to pick up food for you or get you gas or something? I got you. Not even a thought about it. Don't pay me back. Don't worry. You can give me a coffee someday. I'm from the South. We just take care of people. Like, truly, we just, and it's so easy. There's literally no skin off my back to just be nice to people.
Yeah.
And so I feel sorry for them that they live in that mindset. And I hope some of them hear this and they're not going to know if I'm talking specifically about them because there's no identifying information that I've shared, but they're going to know. And I want them to know that I hold no ill will against them. no matter what they did to try to hurt me, bring me down, at the end of the day, I'm happy, I'm successful, I have love in my life. They didn't win. And I hope that they're able to come to terms with that and find it in their hearts to forgive me for whatever I did and move on.
Yeah, I think the best thing that we can wish for people like that is that they realize that they need to change. Mm-hmm. The people that wronged me or, you know, were just in a bitter place when I was serving, you know, when I first got out of the military, I was mad. I tell people all the time, when I started this podcast, a lot of it was out of anger because I mm-hmm. was like, people need to know how bad the environment and the culture in the military is.
Mm-hmm.
But then probably about a year in is when I realized, okay, well, anger is not going to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do to tangibly make change? Mm-hmm. And so then I shifted my perspective about it.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that rage and anger that I once felt, but it did exist at one point and for some time, you know, and I think that's to be expected. We're human.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have this theory that most people who join the military are broken in some way, shape, or form. I mean, there's people that join the military homeless off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that join the military that live more sheltered lives. There's people that join the military that came from abusive situations. And then there's some people that join the military that they did come from what most would consider a very privileged background, but because mm-hmm. of that, they can't really relate to other people around them. And when we talk about this diverse melting pot that is mm-hmm. the military, I mean, I was the same when I went to boot camp. I realized just how diverse America was. Like, I mm-hmm. had no idea. I grew up in the Midwest. And so, you know,
ooh.
Right. Yeah. Homeschooled Midwest. I had not really left my bubble of Iowa and then the states around it.
Mm-hmm.
And in realizing that there's so much more to America and the people in America was a lot to take in. And it was a bit of a culture shock. And so when we take all these people from all these different backgrounds who just kind of have an expectation of how the world is based off mm-hmm. of their narrow perspective.
Yes.
I mean, it's almost to be expected that you're going to have clashes of personalities. You're going to have power dynamics. But mm-hmm. what I don't think is acceptable is the way that the military sets people up for that diverse
it's the
culture
cycle of
clash.
Abuse.
Yeah.
It's the cycle
yeah.
of abuse. They just
yeah.
need to break it. And it'd
yeah.
be so easy. It
yeah.
really would.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. It's crazy. There's all these experts out there who train leadership, just leadership alone. I mean, the one snippet that would make a world of a difference. And I'm like, why are we not investing better? Like, we bring Toby Keith and, you know, all these people
right.
to these military bases to talk and do motivational speeches and cool. That's great. Good for morale. Why aren't we investing money, even if it is through the USO or something, into leadership training?
True leadership training.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's a lot more that goes into it that the military didn't prepare me for when I was
Yeah.
a leader.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
lost.
Yeah.
Didn't know
and
how to handle it.
And I think that's what perpetuates that, you know, I went through
mm-hmm.
this, so you go through this, because, well, this got me from E1 to E6, so I'm going to
mm-hmm.
put you through the same path, right?
Yeah.
And I think people are just doing what the last person taught them, and they're like, well, I made it through, so you make it through too. But I don't know that that would be the end all be all, because people are still people and people are only going to grasp what people want to grasp. But I think personally it'd make a world of a difference, better leadership training. What are your thoughts?
I absolutely agree. I think all it takes is the handful of people taking it to heart. And I mean, the old saying goes, shit rolls downhill. You
Yeah.
know, if two chiefs at my last command had taken a true leadership course and taught, you know, they each taught two more first classes how to be good leaders. And it trickles down. You know, you can never throw mandatory out there, because if you throw mandatory out there, then they don't want to do it.
Right.
But I mean, if I could go back and do something like that, do it just a seminar on how to be a good person and how to be a kind leader,
yeah.
I would in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
I want to help these people. I want to help these little juniors coming up, these little 18, 19-year-olds who are trying to figure out the world. And, you know, they're at their first command, they get told that they're not worth the bullet it would take for them to off themselves. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
I never want And I hear so many stories like that. And it's so easy. It's so easy.
Yeah, agreed. And even what you talked about with just being kind, I mean, that I say all the time that just that simple gesture of genuinely having an interest in how people are doing, genuinely having an interest in the people around us instead of just mundanely saying, "How are you? Good? Okay, cool. Here's the work for the day." You
Or
know,
even
someone.
worse, asking for that the what's going on to use as drama, to use as
Yes.
gossip.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah.
just ask me how I'm doing and then
Yep.
move on. And
Yeah.
make sure I'm good
Yeah.
and then keep it to yourself.
Right. Yeah. People have a really hard time with that in the military. Really hard time. Which, you know, goes back to the trust factor and, you know, people aren't telling people how they're really doing or talking about their mental health, which I think is very strongly correlated with the suicide rates in the military. And, you know, they don't even track the attempted suicide rates in the military because they don't know, to be frank with everyone listening. I mean, they just don't know who's attempting because no one's saying, "Hey guys, guess what I did last night?" I mean, no one is going and telling anyone to track that statistic, but I guarantee you it's high. And a lot of that goes back to just the simplicities of, you know, give people a reason to trust you, but also give people a reason to know that you are that person that genuinely cares about them and genuinely takes an interest in just you as a human being.
And
So,
that's my last command was at a nuke school.
yeah.
That has the highest rate of both attempts and completions in the Navy. I cannot tell you how many students I walked by that were just standing at the end of the pier looking in the water. And I was like, okay, I know I'm armed up. Please don't be scared. Let's go talk. Let's go get a
Yeah.
snack. Let's sit down.
Yeah.
Are you good? Come see me in the in the cafeteria later. Grab me from, just come talk to me. And
Yeah.
I have students who wouldn't, hey, you're having a hard time, go talk to Hardy.
Yeah.
She's got you.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are the things that no one's really talking about. I think that from the civilian side, but even on the active duty side, people just don't know the magnitude of it. Because we've all become very jaded, isn't the
Jaded.
right word, I don't think, but we're,
Numb.
yeah, numb is the word I was looking for. We're very numb to talking about and hearing about suicide. Because when the article came out a few years ago about three suicides in 1 week on, I think it was the George Washington, I was appalled. And I was like, this should be bigger news. Why are people not talking about this? That's a big deal. One command having three suicides in 1 week is a problem, but it was just like a military News Times article for like a few days and then it went away. I'm like, but these people have to deal with that for the rest of their lives. Same with like the Fitzgerald when that went down and people had to physically, like, you know, be in the air. Some of them had to close the hatches on their friends. I mean, no one's talking about this stuff, but people are dealing with the repercussions of it every day. And so I think talking about it on platforms like this is a step in the right direction because people start to understand stories like yours and stories like other people's who have served, who have some of them held on to those stories for years and, you know, just thought that no one could relate. But there's always someone that can relate to your story. I very much relate to a lot of things in your story, and I guarantee you there's at least one other person out there that does. So I
I hope
know
so.
podcasts can be very intimidating, very sometimes, even for me, still getting on other people's. I'm like, I should have said something differently. And I'm like overthinking for weeks afterwards. But I'm so appreciative that you took the time to come on here. I do want to give you a little bit of time to talk about what it is that you are doing now for anyone that wants to take advantage of that, because we chatted before we recorded and I said that I do. So there's value there. So go ahead.
So I work for a company called Atlas Benefit Consulting, and what we do is we assist veterans with their VA disability ratings. We consult on both new service connections and we consult on existing service connections that do qualify for an increase. We are not accredited claims agents or attorneys. I'm reading off my little disclaimer here so I can remember the exact verbiage. So we do not work within the VA system, but we do follow the laws and the regulations for companies that do what we do. A lot of them, people will recognize the name Veterans Guardian, Vet Comp and Pen, those kind of things. we work in the same field in a different aspect, is what I'll say. So we, like I said, we help with new service connections. So that is building you from the ground up. Do you have evidence? Do you have a diagnosis? Can you tell me what caused it in the military? Cool. Next step, we'll start learning how to, you know, navigate a CNP exam, which is a compensation and pension exam for anybody listening. That's the exam you go to through the VA for your disability claim. But we learn how to navigate that using the language that the VA uses, and learning how to advocate for yourself using your own stories. So that's a fantastic program. And then our big seller, quote unquote, is our DBQ generation program, or layman's terms, increase program. That's what I went through. And that's where we screen you through what you're currently service connected for using the VA's rules and regulations. All of this is also public facing. It is all public knowledge. You can pull it up anywhere, but ask a bunch of questions, ask about symptoms, things like that. And then by the end of it, and say, okay, in a perfect world, you should be rated at this, this, and this on these things. And that'll bring your overall rating to 100. Most common one that I get is going for 100. And then we have we partner with a medical network similar to what the VA uses, not one of their companies, but similar to their companies, do a whole bunch of evidence gathering, questionnaires, things like that. We send them to a doctor's appointment, again, comparable to the CNP exam. And then you get DBQs, which for anybody who doesn't know, those are the disability benefit questionnaires. And that is the form that gets filled out during a CNP exam with your symptoms, your history, and things like that. Again, that is all public facing and can be found just by Googling it. You can literally pull up any questionnaire that's going to be part of a claim, and you can see exactly what language is on there. But with the increase program, it kind of takes the VA out of the process, with the exception of making the decision on the claim. So they submit the completed documents, and the VA makes a decision based on the same documents that they would do. So it's a great program. It's how I got my 100%. I think last I checked, I've got 40 some odd that reported that they were successful. That's not including the ones that just ghosted me afterwards and didn't tell me that they were successful or not. And a great majority of those are going for 100%. I just screened two or three people today who were going just from 90 to 100, just that last little jump, because VA math is goofy and you have to hit 95% to hit 100. But I won't go into VA math. That'll be something I'll post about on my social media. Shameless plug. But yeah, it's a great company. We are for profit, so it is a paid service. But one of the things I really like is that we are a flat fee structure. So you confirm, I want to do this, this, and this, or I, you know, want this and this to happen. You pay the flat fee, and that is the only time you're paying for my consulting services, my coordinating services. And then if and when you are successful, everything that you make in back pay is 100% yours to keep. So I have not done a whole lot of looking into it, just because it doesn't really affect me. But I do know some of the other companies take a percentage of back pay, or they, you know, looking in the high five figures or low five figures in there. Honestly, we're, all things considered, pretty affordable. Most of my veterans spend about $3,000, and that's through all the, that's the average that I've seen is about $3,000. And they, I've had a vet get 30, no, we had someone, it was either 39 or 42,000 in back pay.
Wow.
Recently, I paid $2,700 and I got $27,000 in back pay.
Wow.
That was worth it to me. So wow. Yeah, that paid for everything I needed done the next year.
Yeah.
But it's a really great program. I love working here. It's a great chance to interact with somebody who understands how your mind works. I will make shameless jokes about myself. I use myself in most examples when I'm talking about symptoms, all that kind of stuff. It's veteran owned, veteran run. We're still so small that there's no chance you're not going to be treated like family.
Awesome.
You're going to be treated like one of our own.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy working there. I will definitely have my, I'll get my, the website for our company, and I'll also have my consultation request link awesome. Sent over to you so that you can add that. And that just goes straight to me. They're able to get right in contact with me, but it's absolutely worth it. We always do a free screening, and that is 30 to 45 minutes on the phone with me. There is no obligation to move forward. I know some people are like, oh, well, they're pushy. I'll tell you right now, I'm not a salesperson. I don't sell things. I teach you what could happen if you trust me on this. But the screening is always free. I always try to send my vets away with at least some information. If I'm not the right fit, I'm going to point them in the direction that is going to be the right fit for them. Because at the end of the day, I just want to help my vets out. I would do this for free if my boss would let me. He won't though, for some reason. It's weird. He's like, you have to be compensated for your services or something. I don't know, something weird like that. But yeah, it's a really great company. I cannot speak highly enough about it. I've been there for 2 years now. Yay. And do not plan on leaving anytime soon.
That's awesome. Yeah. I think one of the toughest things when it comes to anything claim wise is digging back into a medical record of things that I don't want to relive that.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about my medical record in the Navy. Yeah. Cause we bury that in the back of my brain. Right. So I don't have to relive that stuff. And that's the tough thing about finding the right person is finding someone to trust that doesn't mm-hmm. make me feel like I'm crazy. A lot of other veterans, veteran to veteran conversations, I talked to quite a few people who never even filed a claim. I've actually talked to two in the last few weeks who are like, oh, I'm good. I'm not disabled. And I'm like, well, I'm 90% service connected, but you won't find me talking about myself oh, I'm a disabled veteran, because right. I just personally don't like to refer to myself like that. And some vets do, and that's okay. But I think, people feel still like they're taking away from someone else or that they're lesser of a person. And I'm like, no, 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 that's not it at all. If you are dealing with some of these ailments, I can physically see you are dealing mm-hmm. with this, go get your compensation for it because you deserve it.
This is what I will say, because I had this mindset for myself, and I have a lot of veterans who have that mindset of, no, I'm fine, I'm good. So I do refer to myself as a disabled veteran, but that's also part of, quote unquote, my brand. My brand is being a disabled veteran, but I share my stories publicly on social media with my vets, everything for that reason. So absolutely understand, if I wasn't in this field, I probably wouldn't say much of anything.
Yeah.
But I'm loud and I'm proud about it. Yeah. I'm a disabled vet.
Yeah. And that's 100% okay. No, no knocking you down for doing that. Yeah. Everyone's different.
Yeah. The vets that come to me that are like, I just don't feel like there's anything I can claim, or I'm fine, or I'm taking it away from somebody else. I always come back with that, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to challenge that right now. That money's still going to be there, regardless of who it goes to. That money is still allocated. So why shouldn't it go to you?
Right.
Secondly, we all have something that is a result of the military. Okay, you only have two things you want to claim and you get 30 or 40% overall rating. Okay, it's still 30 or 40%. You can now do no down payment VA loans.
Right.
With 30%. That's huge. Just that much. You can now do a VA loan and you don't have to do a down payment.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you? But we all have something that the military did to us, whether it's headaches, reflux, mental health, your back hurts, your knees hurt, whatever. Something is not working the same as it was when you got out.
Right. Right.
You signed on the dotted line. You gave your blood, sweat, tears, soul, bodily autonomy to the military, and they waved goodbye to you without a coin in your pocket, just a pat on the butt and say good luck when you went to civilian life. Take advantage of the resources that you are entitled to. Are you always going to get people getting 100%? Are you always going to have these super high ratings? No, and that's okay. But you are entitled to apply for these benefits.
Absolutely.
And clearly I am incredibly passionate about this.
Yeah.
But when I hear people tell me that they're not, basically that they're not worthy of it, and I'm like, you look at me, do you really think that I'm a disabled veteran? Just looking at me and looking at you.
Yeah.
It's not, and I wasn't in combat. The closest I ever got was an Iranian pointing their cruiserive weapon at me because they got too close and they thought it was my fault.
Yeah.
I stood there and I was like, oh, look, my butthole's in my mouth. Cool. And then I moved on. That was it for the combat for me. So you don't have to, but there, I get very passionate.
It's not about how you look or who you are. I mean, I think most people still struggle these days looking at a female and thinking that we're veterans in general, but it's not about who you are or what
hair doesn't help.
Right. They're like, you're not a veteran, but I think the point is, you don't have to change anything about yourself because you filed for claims or for benefits based off of your service. You don't have to identify as a disabled veteran. You can identify as a disabled veteran. You don't have to tell people anything about your medical or your financial mm-hmm. anything, because frankly, it's none of their business. If you want to keep that to yourself, do that. But at least if you're a veteran and you're listening and you have not at least explored that option, please do. Because, first of all, everyone right now in this economy could use some extra money in their pocket.
Some tax-free extra money.
Yeah. And you know, I know some people will throw around like the 100% and make it sound like it's like a trophy to go for. And I know for some people it can be triggering to hear that because they're like, well, you know, I have this ailment and I wouldn't want 100% on anyone. But, you know, again, if you are already dealing with the things that entitle you to that, it's not like you're going in and you're lying and you're saying like, I have something I don't have.
Right.
Cause
they'll catch get that what in you heartbeat. Deserve.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. And I've heard it. I mean, when I was active duty, before I even knew I had PTSD, I had people coming up to me and they're like, hey, make sure you claim PTSD because you'll get an extra. And I'm like, what? Yeah. Don't do that, please. If you don't go lie about something that you don't have, but make sure you get what you deserve.
Exactly. And that's the end all be all. Get what you deserve.
Yes. Absolutely.
So as I tell all my vets, take some of this Victoria energy, this feral energy here, channel it into yourself and call me. Yes. Talk to me. Ask me questions. Let me help you.
Yes. And I will post all that info in the show notes. Yes. So for anyone that is just genuinely curious, just go talk to her for free. And you know, if anything, you took a step in the right direction. Exactly. And it can be very scary. I get that. But it's a step. And that sometimes that's all you need is that little push and that step to know that like, oh, I did that. But Victoria, thank you. Thank you again. You have been incredible. You have such an amazing story. And like I said, there's so many people that are going to relate to this in general. But I hope that everyone listening at least shares this episode for anyone that needs the information that you put out there, especially about the benefits and the claims filing and stuff, because, you know, there's still a lot of vets out there that haven't taken that step, but you know, you never know who needs to hear this story. And so I hope that if you're listening to this, even if you didn't get value, which I hope you did get value, that you share it for someone else who might need that value from this. So Victoria, the last question I'm going to ask you today is if you have any last words or pieces of advice that you want to leave the listeners with.
I've said it a couple times so far. It costs exactly nothing to be kind to people. If there's anything I could share, it would just be kind. Do one kind thing a day and see how quickly it changes how you view the world.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.